My overriding ambition is just to make sure if I get a chance, no one comes and tells me I'm not playing again.
That is as good as you will see.
There were times when I thought I might not play cricket again or play white ball especially. So yeah, to come out tonight and do that is awesome, and it makes all the hard work over the last kind of 18 months really worth it.
A fitting finish. What an innings, what a partnership.
This is the Talk of Trent Bridge. I'm Matt Freeman, and we're joined this week by an outlaw on the other side of the world as Chris Nash takes a bit of time out from a high-performance camp with Gary Kirsten and his time with the England setup to talk to us about his winter so far. The Notts batsman gives us the inside track on what it's like to work in the England dressing room as they return to one-day cricket after the World Cup win.
I couldn't go far away watching Stokesy prepare. You think of him hitting sixes and smashing it, and the way he prepared is almost completely different to that.
We hear more about the key things Chris thinks he's learned over a winter working with Chris Silverwood and Gary Kirsten.
I've learned how hard coaching is as well, how much they have to work, and when you're a coach and you watch the players perform, you can't control what they do. So sometimes the coaches get the flak, but you know, we as players deserve it, you know, because we're the ones out there performing.
And we hear how his winter in South Africa could have gone down such a very different path.
The Love Island Villa is about half a kilometre that way. There's talk that I have been scouted a few times just to go and join in the villa and just shake things up.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, real busy and then preparing for the season, so I had to turn ITV down.
But first, we hear from Chris on how going to South Africa makes him feel he's wintering well. Chris Nash, welcome to the Talk of Trent Bridge podcast.
Oh, it's an honour to be here, mate. It's taken us a few days to kind of connect, but I think the Wi-Fi here looks solid for the next bit. So, I've got half an hour for you.
It's a long time coming. You're a man in demand at the minute, aren't you?
Well, you know, some people say that. It's either a man in demand or I just didn't want to talk to you. It's one of those two things. But, it's been a really busy kind of 4 months. So it's nice to kind of have half an hour in the afternoon just to relax.
So when did you leave England to fly out to Cape Town? When was that?
1st of November I left.
And when are you due back?
I'm due back about the 5th of March, I think. I think my flights are booked somewhere. So I'm joining up with the lads on Monday the 9th.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping they've got some warm weather gear for me because I don't know the amount of stuff. I've just got my shorts and T-shirt. So, looking forward to getting back and joining in with the lads again. Been a really good winter kind of personal development and training, so raring to go now.
That is doing winter right though, isn't it? I mean, leaving the English winter behind in November, coming back in March. We've had snow, we've had wind, we've had all sorts this week, and you're getting none of it.
Yeah, there's a bit of wind around here, I've lived the swallow life. I mean coming over here obviously as the clocks pretty much change and then the winter kind of sets in. I must admit, you know, speaking to everyone at home, you always feel a bit smug being away, but it's been a fantastic winter, kind of for my personal development, for my cricket, for my fitness, and just generally being away is always a nice thing.
Looks like a sort of beautiful view a little bit behind you there, Table Mountain over the other side, and the Love Island Villa pretty close as well, is it?
Well, funny enough, if the view you see behind me, I don't know how clear you can see it from my phone, but the Love Island Villa is about half a kilometre that way. So I can't hear what's going on there and I can't watch it on TV, but I know from reports back home is that I'm very close, and they have the same view as that. So there's talk that I have been scouted a few times just to go and join in the villa and just shake things up.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, real busy and then preparing for the season, so I had to turn ITV down.
Is that the post-playing career idea? Is it kind of do Love Island, do those sorts of bits and bobs?
You know, it's been spoken about. I think they're looking at vintage Love Island first, kind of the over 35s. It's not on my radar, unfortunately. But it is just over there. So it's good to know that I can kind of see it.
I think they get a day out. Like Saturdays, I think they have a day off, don't they? So they could be like down on the beach or something. I'm sure that's a thing.
They do little excursions. Yeah, they've done an excursion just to a vineyard down there. So they're out and about.
I suppose you'll spot them a mile off with their sort of...
No, they're heavy security. They're not allowed to see people like me.
No, I spoke to you a few weeks ago when you start to work with England ahead of that test series, and then you've been back with them for the ODI a little bit as well. How did that come about? Were they suitably impressed?
Well, I hope so. I mean, if they asked me back, then that's a good thing. So, obviously I had a really busy kind of period before Christmas working with the Durban Heat. Gary Kirsten got me involved there, which was fantastic. So I basically turned up on day one and he said, right, you're in charge of the batters. So that was my role there. Took charge of a game as well when he had to fly back midway through a game. But that was a fantastic tournament just to kind of get me going and just to kind of give me some experience. But then obviously once I got back, I got to Cape Town after that, had a couple of weeks just relaxing here. And then Brodie texted me and said, fancy the New Year's Eve party with the England boys. So jumped up onto some rooftop hotel and bumped into Thorpey and Chris Silverwood. And they just said, look, kind of got chatting and they said, look, come along tomorrow morning. So 9 o'clock the next morning on New Year's Day, it was out there working with the lads. So, and from that, the experience I've got, just being involved in that environment, you know, for the test match and then to obviously see how well the test match went and to kind of feel a bit part of it, I suppose, with helping out. And then I got the text from Thorpe. He said, well, fancy the one days as well. So did a couple more days there to work with a different set of guys. Obviously went from Rooty's team to Morgs's team. Just to be involved in that environment was almost as a, I suppose it is as a coaching capacity, is something unique, you know, for me, and something completely new. So an amazing experience for me. And it's, yeah, been a fantastic winter so far.
What were the big things you noticed that were different between being in that Joe Root England test setup and then with Morgan and the world champs?
Probably the easiest thing to say would be one is the world champions. The other's a team kind of on the up with a lot of young players. You know, you had to use Zach Crawley's, Dom Sibley's, Popes. Probably younger guys making their way, whereas you walk into that one day side and the last game they played was the World Cup final at Lord's. So it was a completely different feel. One was kind of young, exciting, fresh. They just come off a loss as well, so there was a bit of pressure on them as well. And then I walked into the one day team, which was kind of coming up from that high of winning the World Cup and then starting again. So it was fascinating to see how Rooty did it, how Morgs did it, how Chris Silverwood was. All the coaches were amazing in terms of how much time they gave me. I mean, going up to that test match, Chris Silverwood came and, you know, spent an hour with me. So the amount of time he gave me when they were under a lot of pressure, having lost the first test, something I won't forget.
Who impressed you most looking at them in close quarters?
Good question, actually. I mean, it would be easy for me to say, you know, the same old people, the normal people. I think I couldn't go far away, especially in the test match, and watching Stokesy prepare. The way he prepared was pretty unbelievable. You know, you think of him hitting sixes and smashing it, and the way he prepared was almost completely different to that. He was working on his basics religiously. So, you know, although it is Stokesy, it was Stokesy different to what maybe I thought he would be. And then the one day team, I mean, it was interesting, you know, watching guys like Tom Banton come into the team and Jason, you know, the way Jason Roy hits the ball. But again, Morgie was completely different to what I thought. He came in and played defensively.
Yeah.
So I learned a lot in that respect of how these guys go about it, and was really impressed with the way they went about it. They were a very self-sufficient bunch, and yeah, really, really great environments to be involved in.
And a lot of new players in that team from the one that won the World Cup. Was it sort of an all-one-team mentality? Could you tell who'd lifted that trophy at Lords? Who were the new guys?
No, it's a good question. Yeah, another. Yeah, it was. You probably wouldn't do. I mean, you knew that a couple of guys, you know, there'd been a few little changes in there, but actually, the way Tom Banton came into the team, you know, Joe Denley felt very much part of the team, even though he wasn't involved so much in the World Cup. So all the guys who hadn't been involved as much, probably, you know, you imagine Matt Parkinson's and people like that, they were settled in very nicely, which I think was probably down to the leadership and the way the guys welcomed the new players in and make everyone feel part of it.
And now Joe Clark, Ben Duckett are off to join you out there as well.
I've come here to get away from them. Yeah, I bumped into them yesterday, went and had a hit with them yesterday, so nice to catch up with them. Nice to see how pale they are compared to me, just to begin with. But the boys look like they've worked hard. I mean, you know, I've been keeping an eye, speaking to Morsey, speaking to Marl and Fletch and the guys, and looks like the guys have worked really hard and ready to go for the season.
Now, you've been an outlaw overseas for the past, 4 months or so? Plenty of other outlaws doing things across the globe this winter, including Harry Gurney, who's back from a shortened stint in the BBL, but will be off to the IPL in around 5 or 6 weeks' time. So I caught up with him a few days ago to find out how he felt his time in Australia had gone and what was next.
Harry, it was quite a different Big Bash for you this year to when we spoke around this time last year. What was your overall feeling about your time with the Renegades?
I mean, from a cricketing perspective, it was obviously not how we intended for it to go. I think it was a little bit of a perfect storm. Without making excuses, there were a couple of games, a couple of things that went against us that might on another day have gone with us. And you know, the overwhelming thing is we probably didn't play, or we definitely didn't play as well as we know we can. So, and there were a few injuries and things like that. So, bit of a disaster from start to finish, but one of those things that you just sort of draw a line under, and hopefully the Renegades can go close to winning it again next year, or even win it.
What were your emotions when you were out there after getting injured? The Renegades started to pull things around a little bit, but was there some frustration that you couldn't be part of that?
Yeah, a little bit. I felt, if I'm honest, I did watch two or three games and think I probably could have had an influence on the outcome of the game, which is really frustrating. And actually, as one of only two overseas players, you do feel a certain element of guilt as well, because, as I say, it was I'd sort of let them down in that regard. But you know, injuries are part and parcel of playing professional sport, or of playing sport at any level, and you have to deal with them when they come along. And as I say, I'm fortunate that for most of my career I've managed to avoid any major ones. And yeah, it was frustrating, but it happened.
You were placed in that side by Samit Patel for his first spell in the BBL. What did you make of how he went?
I thought he did really well. You know, he's Maxi Klinger rang me and said, you know, what do you think? And the same with Dan and probably various other people, I'd have thought. And you know, Samit's figures don't lie. He's an outstanding cricketer. He's, in my view, one of the best ever Nottinghamshire cricketers, which sounds like a huge shout, but I think it is the case with Samit. And I think at the end of his career, well, already, if you look at the numbers, they don't really tend to lie in cricket. Across the formats, he's scored a huge amount of runs and taken a lot of wickets and contributed to winning lots of games and trophies for Nottinghamshire. So there's no reason why he can't do that around the world in various other teams, as he's already started to show.
And what is next for you? Is it prep for the IPL now?
Yeah, IPL. So with only playing T20 cricket now, I don't really have an extended off-season period. For the majority of my career, I'd have had a sort of five-month stint every winter where I can get fit and I can get strong. And with playing lots of tournaments on and off around the world, you get less of that. So I'm focusing on the next 4 or 5 weeks before I fly off to the IPL as a real period where I can work hard on my strength and my fitness, and injury prevention stuff, rehab, all that kind of stuff, so that when I arrive in India, I'm ready to go. Because once I get there, it's pretty much continuous cricket after that for me for the next 6 months.
That's Harry Gurney speaking to me a couple of days ago. One of the things I've asked a few of the people we've had on the podcast, and I don't know if your time coaching this winter has changed this in any way. What people would have done if they weren't a pro cricketer? I mean, would you always have wanted to be involved in cricket in some way, or was there something else entirely that you would have done?
I mean, look, I went to university. I did a sports science degree, which probably doesn't really qualify me for that much. Generally, you do a sports science degree to delay real life for 3 years. So it wasn't as if I was doing a business degree or something. I've always wanted to be a cricketer. I suppose it was always something I wanted to do. I always wanted to be involved in cricket, and I love the sport. But I think if I had been at 16, if someone said you can't be a cricketer, I probably would have been a squash player, because I was playing to a decent level then. Would I have made it? Probably not anyway, but I think that's what I would have wanted to be, maybe a squash player. I spent a long time out here, maybe a shark cage dive instructor or something like that. Maybe that would have fitted out the bill.
Have you done any of that? Have you gone down in a cage for the sharks?
Got down in the cage, yeah, no, I spend a lot of time in the water. So actually, from where I am now, you can see, lucky enough over here to do a lot of surfing. So I do a lot of surfing. You can see the beach I surf at, but you can also see Seal Island, which is obviously, it's like a buffet for the sharks. So they're quite close by. So every morning when I leave the house, I can see, and I have to decide whether I want to go in the water or not. But yeah, it's good fun.
What possesses you to go, well, I mean, cage diving for that, or even going anywhere near where sharks would be? I'd be petrified.
I think curiosity. You have to go down to see them at close. One, you're in a cage, so you like to think you're fairly safe. But just to see them, really, you know, you hear about them, you know they're there. So to spend some time out there and see nature, you know, you're lucky here. You get seals, you get dolphins, you get whales, you get the sharks. So I think when you're out here, you know, you get the penguins, so you get that opportunity to kind of get out there and see all the wildlife, and then you get the big five in the safari park. So I think it's part of life here. You've got to get out there and see all the animals.
It's a good place for sort of an adrenaline junkie, I suppose, isn't it? Have you done anything else out there, any bungee jumping, anything like that?
I'm not allowed. I don't think I'm allowed to. If I had done, I wouldn't be allowed to tell anyway, because I'd probably be getting a call from Morsey straight after the podcast. I've done paddleboarding, you're surfing, climb a lot of mountains here. Not like rock climbing, but you hike up mountains. So you go on long hikes. Table Mountain's about 3,000 meters high, so you can do a good hike up there. That's about as adrenaline-y as it gets here, or that's what I'll tell you anyway.
Now I want to try something. We're going to call it a question of ball.
Question of
ball.
Okay.
Basically, a couple of weeks ago, you probably won't have seen because you're over in South Africa, Jake Ball was on a Question of Sport not very long ago.
I knew he was on it, I just didn't see it.
Yeah. So I thought I'd see how you got on with the cricket questions from that episode of A Question of Sport, to see how you'd fare in comparison to Jake Ball on the telly. How do you think you'll do? Do you think you're all right at this sort of thing?
I mean, I'll put it out there. I mean, if I can't beat Borley, then, you know, as a university-educated man, I'll be disappointed in myself.
Well, I think this first question is the only one he got to. The others, someone else beat him to the buzzer, even if they got it right or wrong. So the question that Borley got cricket-wise on that show: which bowler took the last of his 309 test wickets in 2018 and then took 59 wickets to help his side to the championship title the year after?
In what year? Sorry.
I think he finished playing test matches in 18. It would have still been the 18 championship year that he won in, though.
Okay. I can't even think who won the county championship the year before. Essex won it 2 out of the last 3. God, why am I so useless? Oh, sorry. Sorry, Morning Morkel.
Morning Morkel, that's it. Yeah, well done. One right.
Took me a bit long. I think I've missed out on that.
I'm going to blame the questions were asked in an awkward way. I'm going to blame that.
Yeah, that's your fault, yeah.
How many bowlers took wickets for England in the 2019 Ashes series?
10.
It's good. It's not quite right. 9.
It's a solid effort. I'll take that.
It's the suspect you'll expect. You've got Archer, Curran, Leach, Broad, Wokes, Root, Stokes, Overton and Mo. To get your full 9 in there.
Damn.
This one I think is doable. Which county did Dom Sibley score over 1,000 runs for in last season's championship?
Warwickshire.
Easy. Phil Tufnell buzzed in quickly but got it wrong. And where did Nathan Lyon take 6 for 49 in the 2013 Ashes?
6. I'll go the Oval.
Edgbaston.
There you go. So have I beaten Borley or...?
You've still got 2 out of 4. I think you beat Borley on sort of the fact that he didn't quite buzz in for the Dom Sibley question quicker than Phil Tufnell. So there you get sort of a half mark above for that.
Okay.
What's next for you out in South Africa? Still working in the sort of high performance camp with Gary Kirsten?
Yep. So the Gary Kirsten High Performance Camp is a 10-week programme. It started on the 7th of January. It runs through till the middle of March. So obviously I'll leave a bit early. We've got 14 guys, so a mixture of guys. We've got some Dutch guys, some Indian guys, a guy from the West Indies, a few English lads. So kind of a whole mix of guys who are here to work and improve over 10 weeks. So it's a full-time course they're in. So this morning we did, I bust my finger this morning. I didn't bust it, I just got hit on the end of the finger. So I did a coach's masterclass today, batting for 3 hours with them against all the other coaches. So we just, it changes every week. We do middle practices, they do a lot of fitness work, and they do psychology work. So it's a kind of a complete programme for anyone wanting to improve their cricket. So it's been great for me to be involved in. I did a week the other week, I did a spin week. We did a seam week. We're moving into white ball stuff the next few weeks now. So just for me, obviously having done the Durban Heat, T20 franchise, and the stuff with England, Test and ODI, it's been great just to do 4-5 hours coaching a day, really.
Then do you have time to keep up with preparing to play for Notts next season as well? Are you sort of forming part of the camp in that way?
Yeah, I dip in and out. I mean, there's a lot of guys out here as well. You've got Tom Wesley, Simon Harmer, Nick Brown from Essex, so you know, mix up with them. Darren Stevens is out here, so I let him hit me on the shin every week. There's lots of guys to train with, and I get the chance to dip in and dip out when I need to do some work. So sometimes the bowlers will want to bowl after the nets, and I'll go in and bat kind of towards the end of the day. So managed to get a lot of cricket in and a lot of fitness in as well. So yeah, it's been a really good kind of, in terms of my development, as an older player, but also as a player, getting ready for the season.
Yeah, and I suppose what are the big things you've took away from working with the England camp and Gary Kirsten as well? What, as either a player or a coach, are kind of the big things you've took from it?
I think in either way, the simplicity of the best players. The best players do the simple things better than everyone else. Sometimes the players of the lower ability try and do everything but the basics. But you watch Morgan, Root, Stokes, they do the real simple things. So as a player, that's great to know that if you can look after the simple bits, that's important. But as a coach as well, to make sure that when you're working with guys, you're working with guys on the basics. So nail the basics and then go from there. But yeah, it's been a great lesson for me as a player and a coach. Everything I've witnessed and the things I've learned about how much coaches put in as well. I know Frankie will be very happy to hear me say that, but you know, I've learned how hard coaching is as well, how much they have to work, and when you're a coach and you watch the players perform, you can't control what they do. So sometimes the coaches get the flak, but you know, we as players deserve it, you know, because we're the ones out there performing.
Well, enjoy the rest of your sort of month or whatever it is left out there in South Africa. And thanks for dropping on to join us this afternoon.
No, pleasure, and thanks. I'll look forward to seeing everyone in a few weeks.
That's Chris Nash, and plenty more Talk of Trent Bridge on the way soon. And you can keep up with all the behind-the-scenes content as well at trentbridge.co.uk.